You're listening to The Top Line, brought to you by Fierce Pharma and Fierce Biotech. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. In today's episode, we are diving into our annual special report on the top money raisers in the biotech industry. The diversity of storylines among last year's top private fundraisers is indicative of how bumpy the markets were. At least three went through layoffs, one was just acquired, and a third went public. Even when armed with substantial capital, 2023 showed that no biotech is safe from cost-cutting as priorities change or narrow. Joining us today to discuss the details and some of the stories behind the numbers are Fierce Biotech's Max Bayer and Annalee Armstrong. Here they are.
So, Annalee, we start off this podcast reflecting on 2023, the private financing data, the venture capital money that flowed to biotech in what was largely considered a down year. We actually are recording this podcast with some brand new data that we'll talk about that sort of further illuminates the trends, but I'll jump in and get us started. Biotech venture capital had a reduction, a slip in new financing last year, highlighted by some data that HSBC put out at the beginning of 2024. It showed that in terms of total dollars, HSBC tallied nearly $23 billion in venture capital across 613 deals. That was down 21% from 2022 and 42% from 2021. Because you and I are working in this every day, did this seem to fit what we were experiencing anecdotally as we saw new data come in and as we, or new financing and as we were covering the industry?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think that we definitely saw a drop in the total spend on each round. We saw fewer 100 million plus rounds. I remember us as a newsroom getting pretty excited when we saw those. We're like, oh, we got to talk to that company. So yeah, I think that's absolutely not a surprise. Speaking to the PitchBook data that just came out, they had a little bit, their numbers were a little bit higher than the HSBC report, but still showing a similar trend. They saw VC spending drop from $36.7 billion in 2022 to just $29.9 billion in 2023. So that's a lot of money that did not go to biotechs.
Yeah, and it does also seem to fit this theme that I think you and I both heard about the haves or the have-nots. I'm air quoting outside of this podcast. And I think we see that in the data as well. HSBC showed that the reductions that were seen across venture capital as a whole were actually more pronounced in first financing. So the companies essentially coming out of stealth, or the companies that were raising their first round. And I think that's in part because what investors were telling us was that at a time when the biotech industry was struggling, the priority was to actually put money towards existing bets, existing investments that were already being made to make sure that they had enough runway to reach important catalysts that could bring on new investors. It wasn't so much diversifying their portfolio. So it was interesting to see that reflected not just clearly, but like significantly. The first financing dollars fell 39% compared to 2022 and 57% compared to 2021. So a significant drop there for some companies. I think that the interesting thing is the data shows one thing, but you still had some of these companies that had major rounds. Were there any standouts to you in this list of 12 companies, of which all of them had at least raised at least a $200 million round?
For me, it's Metagenomi. I think they've had a really incredible year. They raised a $275 million Series B in January 2023. And then a year later, now they've taken the plunge and done an IPO. So not only is that an incredible journey, but they are now also, I don't want to say leading the industry, they're providing a test case for the industry because they don't have any clinical data yet. A big question heading into this year with IPOs was, is the market going to support these companies that don't really have a lot of data? So Metagenomi is now testing that theory. I think a lot of companies are watching what happens to them, and it'll be interesting to follow them.
They've been a really interesting canary in the coal mine. And I think Metagenomi has been interesting in part because they were one of the clearer examples of a company that was interested in IPOing at the tail end of 2023, but actually held on until the beginning of 2024. Whether or not that was the right decision, we'll never know. But they did slip after they went public. And I think that's in part because despite trying to wait for a better moment for the industry, which they did, to be fair to them, the IPO market was certainly stronger when they did go public than when they were considering it originally. But despite that, they were still an outlier. Like you said, all of the other IPOs largely, and certainly the ones that were doing well, had late stage clinical assets. So it'll be interesting to see how Metagenomi rebounds on the public market after some of their data initially comes out.
They're an interesting company. They're doing gene editing. That's absolutely right. Hot right now. They've got their pipeline is in metabolic disease, hemophilia A, cardiovascular, central nervous system diseases, and cystic fibrosis. So these are all things that are pretty interesting on the markets right now. So chances are that's going to attract a lot of interest.
The one thing I'm interested about for Metagenomi with respect to their clinical ambition is that pipeline seems a little too large.
Yes, there is that.
And if you're looking at a very similar company, say CRISPR, which was maybe this version 1.0 of the gene editors, they just nabbed their first approval. They have a ton of cash. But even them, we've been reporting on their business development ambitions. And so to me, Metagenomi seems like a company that is either going to have to start making deals quicker on their pipeline, or unfortunately, they'll probably have to trim costs as they look to prioritize with public money. Like, I feel like that's what you and I see all the time. That's the thing about going public is it completely blows up your ceiling. You can start like ascending, but it's harder to keep things under wraps. So you have a lot more pressure each earnings report to address. Why are you working on this? What's the priority? Yada, yada. So it'll be interesting to see how executives handle that in their first full year.
Yeah. And that speaks to some of the other companies that we're watching this year who, despite raising a bunch of cash, ended up having to make some cuts too.
Right. So that takes us to some of the other interesting ones, Renegade and Elevate. They are one and two, or two and one respectively. Elevate had a $401 million round, which actually was announced the day after Renegade announced $300 million. But we reported over 2023 that both actually had to go through layoffs. And they were one of a couple other very well-capitalized companies that had to cut staff. Why were we seeing that? And maybe again, what did it say about the industry as a whole that these companies were valued, they had these massive valuations, but still had to trim costs?
If you look at the larger trend in the industry, there were just massive layoffs across 2023. We're still seeing it. I think they raised $401 million, and then a couple months later, they were cutting staff. I think this might be a little bit of an outlier. But then again, I think it just speaks to the fact that cash doesn't necessarily mean a bump in human capital. Sure, they have the money to secure their pipeline, but they still have to make tough business decisions. And if their leadership is doing their jobs, they are making those tough choices. And that's definitely what we saw with Elevate and Renegade.
Yeah, and just this reinforcement of pressure, right? If there's pressure on the venture capitals to make better investments in response to what they're hearing from LPs, then naturally the companies that are receiving venture capital dollars, even if they are nine-digit hauls, they have to address the fact that they have to be using that money as wisely as possible, which is arguably always the case. But I think in a year where money is flowing freely, there's less oversight, there's less sort of penny pinching, but not in 2023, where companies were probably raising money, but it was also predicated on them being really focused, or it's certainly at least not spreading themselves too thin. And so we're highlighting them, but they were certainly not the only ones who were well capitalized and had to lay off staff. The other company I'll just mention as a really interesting example, just watching them last year, was Aiolos Bio, which had one of the largest rounds of the year. And then literally months later, it was acquired by GSK for a little north of $1 billion, I believe. What was your take on their rise and ascension into Big Pharma's hands, essentially?
Well, it sounds like they were doing both at the same time. Mm-hmm. This is something that we've been following. They were probably working on an IPO at the same time they were talking to companies to be acquired. So, and that's a trend we've seen. We've seen a lot of companies who have both things going, or they indicate that they want to do one thing and then a couple months later they do the other. So yeah, it seems like they were doing a dual track process, and ultimately they managed to secure both, which kudos to them.
So heading into 2024, and maybe just reflections on this data, what are some of the disease areas that we're seeing as pretty durable for private financing?
I would point to anything with AI, which is really speaking to the larger fervor in the markets. There's AI fever out there, and biotech is not immune to that. Yeah. We're seeing it everywhere across every sector. So anywhere that a company is using that technology, they're going to get a double look.
RNA editing capabilities, I think, are really interesting. That's the basis of Renegade. When I asked their leadership about how are they going to move out of Moderna's shadow, if you will, it's very based on the editing capabilities that they think they can use RNA for. And I think there's been a lot of good reporting in the last couple of months about how DNA has been a huge focus of editing capabilities and genetic errors there that lead to disease. But people are also thinking about RNA as actually the next frontier there and how they can wield that to bolster and crack open even more diseases that can be treated. And then the disease areas, I think, are immunology and inflammation. And maybe inflammation even more so predicated on the use of cell therapy for autoimmune disease, which was an area that is really coming to focus in the last few months. I think it's going to be probably one of the larger stories in 2024. It already has been with Kyverna going public. But that seems like an area where investors are really going to capitalize. I think, again, it's also in part based off of the Inflation Reduction Act and concern that single disease-focused drugs are going to be subject to price negotiations from the government. So INI allows people to have assets that can have multiple disease areas for one asset. So we'll see. We'll see if that persists. I do really think that AI is going to be an interesting differentiator in 2024.
Another one that I think speaks to the broader theme in biotech right now is neuroscience. Mm. At number 8 on our list, we had MapLight Therapeutics, which raised $225 million in a Series C in October. They are using that money for an M1, M4 muscarinic agonist, which should sound familiar if you've been following the journey of Karuna Therapeutics, which just submitted their drug for schizophrenia. And Karuna also just got acquired by Bristol-Myers Squibb for $14 billion. So good timing for MapLight to be raising in that environment. And I think that's going to be a theme going forward.
I want to bounce off of that theme. I think on the disease area trends, people have been saying, I haven't really been able to see it come to fruition, but I am now. And that's this larger pharmaceutical investment in chronic disease. And so you think about pain, obesity, and heart disease as maybe three that are garnering attention. And so what we've already seen already is a company like Latigo Biotherapeutics that is completely, it's going after the same target that Vertex's pain med has gone after. And we also see Sionna that's coming out with more than $100 million, and that's for cystic fibrosis. And obviously you have BioAge Labs that raised $170 million, thanks in part to its Lilly partnership on muscle maintenance in light of GLP-1 use. So you see these sort of large disease areas that maybe in years past people would have completely avoided, considered them undruggable, untreatable. There's nothing to invest in. Let's go precision medicine. That's changing. And I think that's reflecting in some of the private rounds that we've seen.
Yeah, it's really nice to see cardiovascular come back and any advancements for neuroscience, schizophrenia, depression, all of those things. It's just so heartening to see breakthroughs happening in these areas. I think patients have felt like they didn't have any new options for a long time. And now we have some cool science coming down the pike. So it's good news for everybody.
January was also the second highest month of financings for the psychedelic industry. Yep. Mainly, to be fair, mainly based on Lykos Therapeutics, formerly MAPS, $100 million private round in January. So to be fair, of I think some $160 million, they were the majority. But I think a round of that size, a nine-digit round for a company that's gearing up to potentially have the first FDA-approved psychedelic-assisted therapy by year's end, shows you that there's an appetite to fund those kinds of companies, and there are more coming.
So now looking at 2024, it's been a pretty busy couple months. We're recording this at the beginning of March, and we've seen some themes emerge already, which we can dive into. One I want to point out for sure, Fog Pharma raised $145 million in a Series E, which is a rarity. By this point, companies are usually looking to IPO. Obviously, they've opted not to do that. It'll be interesting to see their journey in the next year. But I think that Series E, when that press release came in, I think that really raised some flags for me.
Yeah, I think that I didn't admittedly speak to Matai Mamin, their CEO, for this story, but I have picked his brain in the past. And something that has been really interesting to track in his thinking is just this very concerted strategy, whether that's business development or partnerships. You know, he's been very, he doesn't see a partnership necessarily as a non-dilutive thing. For him, it's, well, if you lose rights to a drug that you might ultimately want, then that is dilutive in some way. So I think that sort of conservatism is manifested very much in this Series Z. Fogg just launched a clinical candidate last year. So they could have made a case to go public, certainly. I think Mattai, to his credit, is probably one of the more enticing biotech executives. He came from J&J, led research for their pharmaceutical unit, so very much can advocate for having Fogg be a public company, but he's not interested. And he is very clear that we want to be a larger company, a larger biopharma before we go public, before we start wheeling and dealing on our pipeline. So it'll be interesting maybe to see the point at which like Fogg switches gears. Ultimately, they will go public. Ultimately, they will probably find partners and we'll see how the data reads out for them. But I think the incrementalness of them has been interesting under Mattai.
Mm-hmm. Another late round was BioAge Labs. They did a Series D in February. They raised $170 million, which was a pretty big one so far this year. Right. I think that's another, speaks to that trend of companies going later. So there'll be another one to watch.
Yeah. And they, the Kristen Fortney, the interesting thing about them too, is though they had raised significant capital in the past, they actually didn't have that sort of like classic syndicate of investors, the RA, the OrbiMed, and they added investors like that this round. So again, you see that in light of a 2023 of difficult public market jumps, people are getting all of their ducks in a row. They want to have the investors. They want to have the clinical assets. They want to have the catalyst on the horizon so that it can have a news flow. It's not, oh, we've gone public, you'll hear from us in 18 months. That's not going to work. Like people recognizing what Wall Street is telling them, consuming that, digesting it, and acting accordingly. Whereas I think in years past, we were seeing people just like willy-nilly go public and then get pummeled as a result. I think to bring this back to the point you made earlier, this is why Metagenomi, I think, has a bit of an uphill battle in its first year or two as it accrues the data that some of these other companies are keeping or are staying private to build, and then they'll go public. So we'll see how Metagenomi fares as it accrues that on the public markets.
And just bringing it back around to BioAge, they do have a partnership with Eli Lilly to test one of their assets with Lilly's tirzepatide, now approved as Zepbound for patients with obesity. So that's going to be huge, having that big pharma weight behind them, not to mention just having a partnership with that kind of leadership in the space is going to be huge for them. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see when they finally jump to the IPO.
Always helps to have a GLP-1 or a companion drug to make your case to Wall Street at this point in time. Probably maybe one of the easier cases to make. That'll be an interesting narrative this year, though, is like which new GLP-1 companies come out? Who comes out of stealth? How much have they raised? Because clearly this is just still in its infancy with respect to how the market grows, who acquires who. So it'll be a very interesting year to see. I'm curious to see in this podcast next year, how many of the top money raisers are GLP-1 makers? If any, yeah. We'll see.
With that, Max, this has been great.
It's been wonderful. Thank you for hopping on, Annalee.
That's it for The Top Line. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. You can find out more about this topic in our show notes at fiercebiotech.com. Look for podcasts. And that's The Bottom Line from The Top Line.